Item is the Annual General Meeting Notice of Motion, Mediation Policy. It starts on page 36, and there's a recommendation on page 38. Would anyone like to move that recommended motion?
Yep.
Councillor Fox.
I so
And
move.
then second by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I note in the motion that it states that the motion carried at the AGM on Council held on the 27th of February notes regarding part A of the motion that Council has an endorsed enforcement policy which allows for informal action, which includes mediation solutions when appropriate, and notes regarding part B of the motion that the Act already provides an appropriate mechanism for the commencement of proceedings, and thanks the mover of the motion and notifies him of Council's decision. I did receive an email very late this afternoon, which I passed on to the management, and I wondered whether it would be worthwhile asking them to comment on that email, just in case there are any concerns that councillors might have relating to that email from Mr. McDonald, John McDonald.
So, yes. Mr. Basham.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, Mayor. In relation, I read the correspondence and have broken it into two parts. The first one is in relation to, I guess, the endorsement of proceedings with inside the report. And on review of that, Section 240 of the Act, or the Local Government Act, it clearly defines that the General Manager can institute and carry out proceedings on behalf of Council. This position is also confirmed via Council's endorsed delegated authority policy. And to, I guess, further corroborate that, the Local Government Association of Tasmania, Commissioned Simmons Wolfhagen, which is a Tasmanian law firm, on behalf of member councils to review delegation of specific legislation, and one of them was the Local Government Act. I've reviewed that register that Simmons Wolfhagen have developed, and I can confirm that the original source of power concerning Section 240 is the General Manager. In relation to the policy itself, as noted in point B of the proposed recommendation, I'm of the opinion that our current endorsed enforcement policy does allow for mediated solutions to occur, and mediated solutions do occur. But I'm also would like to note that policy that has the ability to limit an authorised officer's ability in order to resolve matters in an efficient and effective and equitable manner, in my opinion, may be unsuitable in this circumstance.
Councillor Fox, what's that?
I thank our staff for those comments, and I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood, and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. I have an alternative proposed for this. Before I put that up on the screen, I guess I think the response in terms of the report to the notice of motion put forward at the AGM is a bit disappointing. So basically, it's at that Council A notes, B notes, C notes, and D thanks. So I feel like it doesn't really address adequately enough the issues raised in the AGM, and this has been an ongoing issue that the Kingborough Ratepayers Association has raised over a fairly substantial period of time. So I have an alternative that I would like to put forward, and I believe Ms. Morton has that.
If we put it on the screen, I'm not sure whether you'd be amending or foreshadowing. I suspect you're probably foreshadowing. No, that's not the right one. No, that's a different one that I reckon. No, that's fine. Okay, well, do you just want to? I think you're probably going to have to foreshadow it because it's quite.
Do you just want to briefly summarise what it says?
Okay. I foreshadow that if the recommendation as currently presented to us is lost, that I have an alternative which reads that Council A notes the motion carried at the AGM of Council held on the 27th of February, which is as currently written. B, include steps to be undertaken as part of a formal mediation process at 5.4 of Council's enforcement policy. C, require a quarterly report be presented to Council in closed session advising of any legal proceedings commenced and the steps taken to avoid litigation. And D, as currently before us, thanks the mover of the motion and notifies him of Council's decision. I acknowledge that we have an enforcement policy that was recently considered by Council in November 2020. But I think there is a valid point raised that at 5.4, compliance and enforcement options, reference to mediation as one option for the General Manager is not specifically referred to. And I think that it could be listed as, on page 41, under 5.4, I think it could be listed as an option with some formal process or way of going about it outlined. I have a question for the General Manager. Before Council commences legal proceedings, is it commonplace to have a chat to the people that we're thinking of going ahead and commencing proceedings against? Is it commonplace that you would use mediation as a process?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Westwood, the short answer is yes. We use mediation at every available opportunity. It is very rare over the last couple of years that we actually institute legal proceedings ourselves.
Thank you. In that case, and that was my understanding, but thank you for clarifying that, if it's something that it happens anyway, I don't see any issue in adding in another specific course of action being mediation with a couple of dot points around how it's to be undertaken. So that's the reason for the point change to point B that I would be putting forth. With regards to a change to point C, I don't quite agree with the notice of motion put forward to provide councillors with notice of legal proceedings prior to the action commencing. I feel uncomfortable about that. I think that would put us in a situation where we potentially might disagree and have questions to ask, but then how do you work out if the General Manager and Council think legal proceedings should occur and, for example, I don't, and I'm not a lawyer, I just don't see the benefit in getting that advice prior to action commencing. But I do see value in being notified in closed session of any proceedings that have been instigated as an FYI, and I would like, if that happens, the steps outlined that were undertaken before the legal action was commenced in terms of whether mitigation was used or whether any other options were considered before legal proceedings were instigated. So that is the alternative that I would propose. I think that is a good midpoint between what was raised at the AGM and what we currently have, and I don't see that there are any downside to that. So I foreshadow that if the current recommendation before us is lost, that I would have an amendment.
Very good. Councillor Street, had your light on.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, look, I have trouble with the report. And look, to be fair, I have some trouble with the original motion by the Ratepayers Association as well, because I don't think it is nuanced enough to take into account the massive breadth of function, enforcement function and legislation under which council operates. But my bigger problem with the advice in the report is that I'm just not sure that I agree with the interpretation of Section 240 of the Act in the report. I think that what Section 240 of the Act provides is that the General Manager can appear for council in any matter, in any proceedings that council is involved in, and can authorise, or we can authorise, the General Manager can authorise any other person to do that as well. I mean, that's so that the 10 of us don't need to rock up to court proceedings when we're in the Supreme Court. And two, instituting the General Manager or a person referred to in subsection 1 can institute and carry on any proceedings. Well, that's so that the 10 of us don't need to sign a prosecution document or a statement of claim if something goes to court. The General Manager can do that, or anybody that we authorise, or the General Manager. So I don't know that that means, therefore, that the General Manager has the exclusive power and unfettered power to commence proceedings against any party. So I have some trouble with that. And I think on that basis, we really do need to go back to the drawing board with this a little bit, because I think at the end of the day, if it's the wish of council that we explore some areas of our enforcement responsibility where we say our first approach is going to be mediation, and recognising that that is not... the one part of the advice that I do agree with is that that's not always appropriate and not always possible under every Act. Some of the legislation with which we deal is very prescriptive about the way in which we must approach enforcement. But where that's not the case, there may well be some merit in saying, as a council, no, well, look, these are the situations in which we absolutely want you to mediate first, and we're going to require you to do that. And I don't think there's any problem with council making that determination. Just because a head of power comes from the General Manager into a delegation doesn't mean that that power is unfettered by the policy positions of council. The General Manager always has to operate within the directions and policy positions provided by council. If that wasn't the case, then I suspect that there'd be very little need for a council. So that's my difficulty with the report. As I say, at this stage, I don't pass any judgment on the ratepayers' motion itself, because I think that there is some merit. There may well be some merit there, but I think we probably need to take some time to actually consider where we might be able to mediate an outcome, and where it might be possible for us to do that, and then have a slightly more nuanced approach. My hope would have been that we would already be considering this as part of Councillor Reet's motion with respect to complaints handling as well. But if that's not the case, then I do think we probably need to put this on hold until such time as we really straighten out what we're actually able to do in terms of the legislation that we deal with, and move on from there. So on that basis, and I hate it when people do this, they speak and then they move to defer, because it effectively cuts off the debate. But I do think that it would be a situation where it would be appropriate to defer, so I move that we defer the motion.
Seconder? Second by Councillor Reet. Procedural. The motion is that the matter be deferred. Moved by Councillor Street, seconded by Councillor Reet. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Carried unanimously. Next item.
I move to defer this one as well.
The motion is that the matter be deferred. Councillor Reet, looking for a seconder. Seconded by Councillor Wass. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. So for those playing at home, we've just very quickly also deferred the implementation of a contemporaneous breaches and complaints register. We've deferred it, which likely means we'll hold a workshop or have some further discussions and make sure that we get the decision right when we come to it down the track. So,
a question on that, then, I agree we defer it, but will we involve the public more into this next?
Well, you're actually, I do apologise, but we've, I don't think we can debate it. We've we can't. Yeah, it's been done. So, but we're happy to talk to you outside of this if you've got any suggestions. The next item is the Longley public toilet. There's a recommendation on page 55. We're talking about a change in direction quickly. Moved by Councillor Grace. Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Grace.
I agree with the report. It's not a negative. It's given an option to go back and consult and come up with appropriate, I guess, location, whatever.
Okay. Now the lights are on. Councillor Vox.
I support the motion that we're basically accepting the petition and we look at this in the context of the budget and other priorities. But I am concerned that the area near the river has got an ongoing issue with septic effluent from the hotel, which is the only toilet in this area, and it has never really been resolved. And I think looking at the names on the petition, it was obviously signed by a lot of people at a very large function at that hotel. And there is also an alternative, of course, having a toilet by the swimming hole, which is very popular with the locals and the families who live in the area. But the people who live in that area spend a lot of time cleaning up after people are visited, with nappies being left under bushes, etc. It's not very savoury, and I think in terms of the community that may well be a more favourable place for a toilet. But once again, the area is flood prone and severely flood prone, as we know from the North West Bay River catchment study. Any septic tank you put in there is not going to work. The petitioners want to have something that's a bit different and that will probably be off the shelf, but at the same time that might not work either in this environment. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done if we are to consider this, and I'm quite concerned that maybe it's not the best solution to the problem, that maybe there should be more pressure put on the commercial people in this area to improve their facilities. Thank you.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I have an alternative, so I foreshadow that if the recommendation is lost, that I would like to foreshadow a slightly different thing. And do we put that up now, or do I just speak to it?
If you use foreshadowing, you can just sort of just brief, don't have to read it out, just briefly say what it is. And then
okay. I foreshadow that if this is lost, I will move to recommend that council notes that a public toilet at the Longley Reserve, which is Longley Reserves, which is opposite the Longley International Hotel, be prioritised for a public toilet in Council's public toilet strategy, and that as part of our decision making around our 5-year capital works program, we look to consider including this in 2022-23, which would give some time to best think about the type of toilet that would go there, and it would also give time to consider the Longley Reserves Recreation Master Plan, which we do have, not approved under this term of council, but the Longley Reserves Recreation Master Plan refers to not only the toilet. It does actually state that council adopt the master plan as the basis for future planning and management of the Longley Reserves, so it would be consistent with what has already been approved before us, but it includes a toilet. It includes that council recommended strategy, council investigate the current costs of supply and installation of a new septic tank public toilet system, identify the best location for a public toilet system within the park area through a whole of park redesign, and install a suitable toilet system within Longley Park as a high priority. I do note that in the public toilet strategy that we have recently, under this council, endorsed, that a toilet in the Longley area is considered a high priority, and it is in that strategy recommended for 2021-22 in that reserve area. But in addition to that, I know there's been some chatter about putting some picnic tables and a barbecue in the reserve as well, which would go hand in hand with a toilet. And again, the reserve's master plan recommends that council investigate the possible installation of an electric push-button barbecue facility within the Longley Reserves, and include within the overall plan consideration for provision of appropriate shelter for user groups within the park. Also, in terms of rubbish, the recommended strategy in the master plan is that council investigate styles and costs of bins that could be used within the Longley Park. So, in summary, I think that there's a little bit more to this issue than just the petition that we've been presented with. I thank the petitioners for bringing the petition. I do note, as mentioned, that not all of them are local residents, but I think that we can strengthen the position that we come to as part of tonight's decision making. So if this is lost, I foreshadow I have something different to put forward.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor, and also thank you to the Deputy Mayor for that proposal. I think I will be voting against this and waiting to see the foreshadowed motion. We need to look at Longley Reserve in a more holistic manner, and so I think the issues there go beyond just the provision of a single toilet. My major concern for that area is the environmental degradation that is currently taking place and could continue to take place if we don't act carefully and responsibly around this issue. I think it behoves commercial entities in the area to take some responsibility, but also council needs to provide very clear direction and also adequately provision and use some resources to adequately provision the area, keeping the environment at forefront of mind. It is an incredibly environmentally sensitive area. The riparian zones there matter, and we need to be careful with them. And it's an area that's heavily utilised by the local community and visitors alike. So I look forward to the next debate, and I'll be voting against this one.
Councillor.
Thank you, Mayor. Just wondering a bit more clarification regarding in the conclusion point 9.2. There is no, in regards to the community consultation, if I can just have some clarification in regards to that, and perhaps a bit, maybe there's some history there, or what was sort of the plan and outlook in regards to 9.2.
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor, we have already been in discussion with the community in relation to this topic, so I think the intent of the petition related more to demonstrating the support from the community in relation to council providing funding for the facility rather than council engaging further in relation to the particular style of the facility. But in terms of the action to be undertaken, we've had some initial communication with representatives from the community, and that was intended to be an ongoing process. But of course, it's subject to the provision of funding, and if there was funding provided for next financial year, we would commence that process sooner. But if it's going to be delayed, then we don't want to set up expectations that there simply isn't the funding to deliver on.
Councillor Grace.
Look, just on the original recommendation of the petition, I thought it covers it pretty well with the public toilet facilities in the Longley area. Are staff happy to consult with the local community in relation to this matter and the time frame? I think all it needs instead of another motion is other facilities, maybe. Then that would cover that now, because it's pretty well explainable what we're doing out there. So would the mover of the amended motion be happy to, can we word that in as the local community in relation to this matter and the time for funding, but we need to put in and look at other infrastructure, or what would Mr. Smee appropriate like to see in there, because we have done considerable work out there over the last few years, and I think as somebody said, there was a master plan. I think we did see, yes, we've seen a master plan. That's to make it easy and simple. I don't know. Or do you want to vote this as it is and then we move it? Because I don't really mind which way, Mayor.
Councillor Gracie, so Councillor Westwood has foreshadowed rather than amended the motion. So if that motion does get debated, you'll be able to move amendments or make suggestions at that point in time. Any further comments? Well, yes, that was supposed to be a question, but we'll say that's closed. Okay. So the motion moved by Councillor Grace and seconded by Councillor Midgley is as printed, and it's that the organiser of the petition in relation to the provision of a public toilet facility within the Longley River catchment area be advised that council staff are happy to consult with the local community in relation to this matter, and be the time frame for funding for the project be confirmed within Council's Capital Works Program as part of the budget deliberation for 21-22. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Aye. I have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hand. Councillor Grace, Councillor Bastone, Fox, Wass, and those against, Councillor Street, Reet, Westwood, Cordova, Midgley and Winter. The motion is lost. Councillor Westwood, with a foreshadowed motion, I believe you've sent it to Ms. Morton earlier, is that correct? Because we've seen it before earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There it is. So for those watching at home on Facebook, you can see there that the motion has been lost, but Councillor Westwood foreshadowed a slightly different motion. Which is now on screen. Councillor Westwood's earlier introduced it, but I need a seconder in order that we commence debate. Councillor Street. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. As outlined earlier, we do have a Longley Reserves Recreation Master Plan. It wasn't approved under this council. It was approved back in November 2010, although I have had a read of it and it does seem sensible. And it does refer to Council adopting the Master Plan as the basis for future planning and management of the Longley Reserves. Now, it sets out a number of issues for consideration and a number of issues to make the space at the Longley Reserve a nice public open space for our community, and I would like to see any decision making around the allocation of a toilet facility done in accordance with this, so that we do consider things like shade, rubbish removal, picnic tables, a barbecue. I've lost my train of thought, sorry. I do understand that there isn't a public toilet in Longley, and I guess one thing I wanted to just point out to my colleagues was, whilst the petition that we received refers to a toilet facility in proximity to the Longley River catchment, and of course the Longley Reserves recreation area is in proximity to the river catchment, I suspect that they were actually referring to putting a toilet in near the waterhole, and so potentially this may not go far enough, but we can't have two toilets in such close proximity. Council also doesn't own the land around the watering hole. We provide the road that goes there, but it's not our land. I don't know how we'd go about putting a toilet on it. And so what I'm proposing is that we focus our efforts on the one place, the reserve opposite the hotel, and that the Longley community be I guess, engaged in that process if appropriate, bearing in mind we do already have the master plan, and I think we could consider the allocation of capital funding, which I believe has been flagged in our current public toilet strategy as requiring $125,000 in 2021-22. I'm aware from budget deliberations to date that that's not in our capital budget for 21-22, but certainly we could discuss including it in a future year when we've done some more work and got some quotes around the cost of the toilet and the picnic area, etc. And I think that strengthening the recommendation to the one I've proposed gives a little bit more certainty to the community, and it also provides a bit of a pathway forward based on previous research and consultation.
Councillor Bastow.
I'm against this motion. These people have been waiting now 11 years since we did the master plan, and you're proposing that it'll be done sometime in the next 5 years. I really think that's probably quite a long time to wait, and I think we should be looking at doing it. It is in our toilet strategy for 2021. We've already decided that, and now you want to put it back for up to 5 years. I really think that there's something wrong with doing it. These people have waited a long time, and I think we should be going ahead with it, as we have already put it in our plan. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. I don't disagree with the sentiments just expressed by Councillor Bastone. I think that we need to act on this and act quickly. I have a question about the environmental impacts. I note that in the master plan, the notion of the environment is given a very cursory, no emphasis whatsoever, but it's only mentioned in terms of using the word environment as though picnics would be appropriate in this environment. It doesn't actually talk about the riparian zone and the natural values. So my question is about the natural values in that area and what are the plans around protecting the natural values, keeping this in mind.
Mr. Smeat.
Through you, Mayor. The master plan does discuss a septic, and I think 10 years down the track, we'll find that a septic wouldn't be appropriate within that location, and then so we'd need to be looking at an alternative wastewater treatment system. Now, that may well be a pump out, in which the same as we've done at Conyngham, where all waste is just removed from the site and there is no impact whatsoever on particularly the river. That is what we had envisaged. However, it needs to be noted that we would need to put in a development application for the construction of the toilet facility, and the waste disposal would require a design from a qualified wastewater designer. And without wanting to preempt what they may come up with, that process would cover off on those environmental concerns that you've noted.
Thanks very much, and that is quite comforting. I think the main thing that we need to keep our eye on here is that even though there's a concerted effort among the community, which I validate, I accept, and I am a part of that push to try and get action on this very quickly, the community deserves it and we'll all be the beneficiaries of it. What I don't want to see is that by rushing this, we inadvertently forget what we're dealing with. And let's look at the context of this area. So we have a pub that's very well patronised, which is wonderful. It's good for the economy and good for the community. But we've got a whole lot of people who go to the swimming hole. We've got a lot of kids and families who are enjoying this area. And we also have a really ecologically sensitive water catchment and river that's going through there. So what we don't want to happen is to rush through something because it's needed now, but inadvertently, nobody wants their kids swimming in a swimming hole that has these kind of issues that we're talking about. Nobody wants that. And we have to think about the flooding impacts, and we've got to think about the long term, something that is sustainable in the long term. So I like the idea of a pump out that means that there's going to be no impact on the river and especially that swimming hole. I think we need to just methodically deal with this with the environment at the forefront of our minds. It's going to benefit all of us by keeping the natural values in the forefront of our minds, and it's going to protect that area for generations to come. What we don't want to see is a rush job where we just forget about the environment, get something up right away, and then we end up swimming in effluent.
Well, look, I prefer this motion than the other one. The reason I do is, well, look, I think 10 out of 10 of us think that building a public toilet at Longley Reserve is a good idea. The issue I had with the first one is that it sort of preempted the strategy and our five-year capital works plan. Councillor Bastone is quite right that it's listed in our in the update on March last year, I think it was. March last year, we considered an update to the public toilet strategy and it listed the Longley Reserve facility for 21-22. So we should be, according to the strategy, building it next year anyway. But where it's not is it's not in our five-year capital works plan. And we sat through a budget workshop only a couple of weeks ago and realised very quickly that there was a huge number of projects we'd like to build and, well, actually, it's not actually a financial constraint. It's actually to find builders, manage the projects internally. We are not going ahead with some of the projects over the next 6 months because we simply can't find people to do the work. The Blacklands Bay toilets that are under construction at the moment are delayed because we could not find builders to do the work. Where we have... I think I've said this before, we've always done a good job of not just prioritising things because they're put in front of us. We put them back into a process where we consider them against all of the other competing projects that we have. And we have so many, particularly in the public toilet space. We have, at the moment, we've got Kettering Hall, which we know is coming up, Blacklands Bay. We talked about Christopher Johnson Park the other day, Margate Hall. We've done some of this. There's a lot more to do, and the motion here, the thing I like about it is that it puts it back into the right place, and that is into the mix for budget consideration. This project wasn't discussed specifically at the budget workshop, which I think on reflection is probably disappointing because it is in the strategy, and I think there'd be an expectation that that we follow through with the strategy. So it is listed at the moment for deferral, but I think we are having that second budget workshop and this is the sort of thing we can put back into the mix. So I'm not hearing any opposition to putting a public toilet at Longley. I'm just hearing that we need to consider it along with a huge list of toilets that need either upgrading or new toilets or replacing or whatever. Any further speakers? Sum up, Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I think you did a pretty good job of summing up for me. Thank you. Just to clarify that the motion up here is not about putting back the construction of a toilet for 5 years. It is more about getting it in front of councillors for consideration. It is in our public toilet strategy, which this council did recently endorse. It is in for 2021-22, but as we have had a budget workshop already and reviewed the budget, whilst it's yet to be finalised, at this point in time it's not in the Capital Works budget for 2021-22 for various reasons, competing priorities, access to contractors, and I guess mainly the fact that we do have so many competing priorities. But putting this into the five-year Capital Works program means that potentially it can be built the following year or the year after that, and it can be considered as part of a broader master plan for that area. So I urge my colleagues to support the motion.
The motion was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Street. I'll read it because it's not in the agenda. And it's that Council A note a public toilet at the Longley Reserve within the Longley River catchment is prioritised in Council's public toilet strategy. B, consider the allocation of capital funding for a public toilet and barbecue picnic area in the Longley Reserve within Council's five-year capital works plan as part of this year's budget deliberations. And C, thank the petitioners for the petition and notify them of the above. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? I have a division. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Councillor Street, Reet, Westwood, Fox, Cordova, Midgley, Wass and Winter, and those against is Councillor Grace and Councillor Bastone. The motion's carried. We move to the declared greyhound exercise area, which is on page 50. Oh, there's a recommendation on page 58. Someone like to move? Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Fox.
I've got the wrong part. That's okay. I thought I had didn't have the report.
No problem. Councillor Fox.
On page 78, there is a very nice diagram that illustrates that there would be a new greyhound exercise area up at Kingston Drive, where there is already an existing dog exercise area, but it would be specifically for greyhounds only in about less than a quarter of that area. So it is a very large exercise area, and I think that there's obviously been consultation with the dog fraternity, and I recommend the motion. I think it's a great idea. Thank you.
Councillor Bastone.
Can I ask a question as to what percentage of dogs that are registered in Kingborough are greyhounds?
Mr. Basham will know this off the top of his head. Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. It is 1.7% of dogs. Thank you.
I said that jokingly. Well done. I did not expect you to know the answer. Any other comments? I had one question, which is about that diagram, and I cannot find it in front of me. But on the diagram, it mentions something about a puppy area on the northern side. But I understand that's been changed now to something a bit more general for dogs. Is that right? Or is it still planned, intended that be a puppy-only area?
Through you, Mayor. My understanding is that it was initially designed as a puppy area. It may be also being used for dogs that are elderly and or scared or similar.
Yeah. That was the piece of feedback I had today, was just that that area is really good for not just puppies, but also dogs that have got behavioural issues, or not behavioural issues probably, that are a bit older or not so keen to fraternise with dogs like the deputy mayor's. Okay, councillor. Sorry, I didn't see the lights on. Councillor Midgley, and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just in regards to the communication and consultation, I was interested to know what were some of the feedback or comments from the associations and appreciation societies that you spoke with in regards to developing this.
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. Very positive from the associations. It was excellent working with them and getting their insight in relation to this. We also went and met with the Greyhound Adoption Program, and they were very positive also with the development of this site.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a lot of sympathy for greyhounds. I think greyhounds have done it very tough, mostly as a result of the enduring lives of confinement and subject to standard practices that are cruel and injurious in the greyhound racing industry. So anything that I can do to make the lives of greyhounds that are being treated with love and care and respect and dignity, like our greyhounds are in the Kingborough community, I'm all in favour of it. I'm interested, though, of course, about the public open space policy and how that relates to this particular area of spending. So obviously the recommendation here is that $5,000 from the public open space account is used to undertake the works. So setting aside all of the issues surrounding the space and this particular, you know, the engagement with the association, which I applaud, and obviously noting my deep care and concern for greyhounds, and I think we should do everything we can to make greyhounds feel loved in Kingborough and beyond. My question is it standard practice for dog walking facilities to be funded via the public open space account? That's my first question.
Mr. Basham.
I'll take it.
Mr. Smith.
Through you, Mayor, public open space funds can be used, or should be used, for the enhancement of recreational areas, a dog exercise area is informal recreation, so it is appropriate that public open space funds could be used for this purpose. In relation to our open space strategy, it does note that enhancement of dog exercise areas is a high priority and working with stakeholders to achieve that. So I think in terms of the appropriateness of using public open space funds on this particular project, it ticks both of those boxes.
Thank you. Just to conclude my statement, sorry, Mayor. Thanks very much for that answer, and that makes sense to me. I'll just point out very briefly, though, that the public open space contribution policy, so that is the policy that sets out the framework for when developers would have to pay into that fund, explicitly says that under its policy statement that the council is committed to providing suitable areas for public open space for community use. Such open space should aim to increase public access, encourage healthy lifestyle practices, create linkages between different activity nodes, and conserve important cultural and natural environments. Now, of those things, I think I would have to point out that apart from encouraging healthy lifestyle practices, spending public open space money on 1.7% of the cohort of dogs within Kingborough, and also bearing in mind that the cohort of dog walkers in Kingborough is not, you know, they're not the majority of the people. 80% of people in Kingborough use tracks and trails, for example. So I just think we need to be aware that the use of this funds, whilst I'm not going to stand in the way this time because it's proportionally quite small in comparison to the overall public open space fund, I think we just need to remember the purpose of public open space contributions, which is to provide for a range of multiple uses and a diverse range of activities, and this doesn't do that, including connecting different public spaces, and this doesn't do that, encouraging active neighbourhoods and tourism, which this doesn't do, and protecting natural values, which this also doesn't do. Out of the things that I listed in the policy statement, this won't increase public access, it won't create linkages between different activity nodes, and it won't conserve important cultural and natural environments. So whilst, again, this time I'm going to say yes to this because I think Greyhounds have done it tough and the association wants this and we want to do everything we can to enliven and enrich what we have in Kingborough, and so I'm wholly supportive of that notion. I just think that next time we shouldn't be rating the public open space account for something that doesn't offer some more inclusive options for all of the community, not just the 1.7%. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I just had a couple of questions around the communication and consultation and the next steps from here. So at 7.1, it says that council officers have liaised with members of the Kingborough Dog Walking Association, the Sighthound Appreciation Society Hobart and the Greyhound Adoption Program Tasmania. Is it intended that further consultation will be undertaken on this following council's potential support of the recommendation tonight?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, in the event that the recommendation was approved, it was definitely my intent to get back in touch with those bodies and get any further confirmation if required.
Thank you. And I note that you have put at 9.2, council may make amendments to the dog management policy without having to remake and consult on the entire dog management policy. So just to confirm, if this is supported, we will not be opening up the dog management policy earlier than it's due, I guess, I think in 4 years, so the beginning of 2023 or the end of 2022. Is that correct?
Through you, Mayor, that is correct. With the Dog Control Amendment Act, an amendment was made to Section 7 of the Dog Control Act 2000, and a paper was released from the Department of Premier and Cabinet. And that talks about an amendment to Section 7 clarifies that a council can resolve to make a declaration with respect to exercise prohibited in restricted areas without having to make and consult on its entire dog management policy.
Great, that's good news. Thank you. Look, I support the recommendation. I think it's a good thing to be able to have a separate area, not only for greyhound owners, but for some members of the community who have negative perceptions around greyhounds. And yeah, I note that there is the, I think it's called a quiet area, not a puppy area, up there for other dogs, which my dog definitely would not fit in. but that there still is a large remaining space for the majority of dog owners to use who don't have quiet dogs or elderly dogs or puppies or greyhounds. So I support this motion and thank you for bringing it forth.
So I just want to make absolutely clear what I'm, because just some of the contributions sounded to me like this was the final decision. 7.2, and this Councillor Westwood also mentioned this, talks about amending the policy, and we're required now to notify the public of the area and any conditions relating to the use of the area, invite submissions. So, for example, the Dog Walking Association or any individual would be able to make a submission. Is that correct, Mr. Basham?
Yes, that's correct, Mayor.
So this is the, really what we're doing is we're commencing a consultation process tonight and allowing people to make submissions, which we are required to do under the Act. And whilst we've got some good in principle support from various individuals and from organisations, there is going to be an opportunity for to hear people with different points of view on this. Should also say for the record, Councillor Grace left the meeting at 7:45 p.m. Any further contributions before I ask Councillor Fox to sum up? Councillor Fox.
I think it's a good debate and I'm pleased that there'll be further consultation. Thank you.
Okay, the motion is as printed. It was moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Westwood. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? The motion is carried unanimously, of course, with the exception of Councillor Grace, who's left the meeting. The next item is the Development Services Quarterly Report. And there's, it commences on page 79 of the agenda, and there's a recommended motion on page 87. Would anyone like to move?
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Cordova, seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I am going to invite the author of this report to speak to some of the more nuanced aspects of the Interim Planning Directive number 4. But before I do that, I'd like to say that yet again we've seen a Development Services Quarterly Report which outlines a very rapid increase in the number of planning development applications and approvals that are taking place in our municipality. Record year on year, month on month, there's been a slight diminution in one particular area so far this year, but we're in January, February. We've got the numbers for, here we are in March. So things are moving at such a pace here. And what I am alerting the council to tonight is that whilst this is good for example, our financial report, which says that we've got an extra $300,000 that we didn't budget for because so many planning approvals have happened. Simultaneously, we are seeing congestion trouble. We are seeing more community concern about the housing crisis, people not being able to afford rents in the community, people not feeling like this is the Kingborough that it used to be. And are we planning
Point
the
of
right
order,
kind
Mayor?
Of...
Are we talking about the Development Services Quarterly Report? And Councillor Cordova is digressing from that.
Just try your best to stick to the topic, Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. I am speaking to it. DA lodgements saw an increase of 8.58% from the year before and a 57.31% increase over the past 5 years. One of the things that these Development Services Quarterly Reports allow us to do is use our informed judgment based on the data and the evidence that's collected to make some broad brush assessments about where we're heading as a community, as a municipality, and as a council. And it informs us, using the evidence and the data provided, about how we should best tackle the issues that our constituents feel strongly about. And those do include, Mayor, things like roads and services, playground infrastructure, environmental and natural amenity, cultural access to public arts and so many different things that make a community worth living in. And what we're seeing again here, for example, is with an increase of 57%, an increase of 57% in 5 years in DA lodgements, we are seeing that on one side of the ledger, we're getting more and more and more. And I'm asking an open question about if the community feels that on the other side of the ledger, in terms of amenity, neighbourhood?
Point of order.
Point of order.
Yeah. I admire Councillor Cordova's creativity, but this is about the operation and performance of the Development Services Department.
Yeah.
If we want to talk about that, then let's talk about that, because that's what's relevant to the report. But otherwise...
Okay. Yep, I think you've made your point.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. I now invite the author of the report, who I thank very kindly for preparing it, to talk us through the summary of changes to the introduction of the Interim Planning Directive number 4.
Ms. Tollemore.
Through the Mayor.
Through you, Mayor. The changes that were brought around by the state government, the IPD 4 overrules the parts of the planning scheme that are already in. It just automatically comes in. Some of these changes are part, well, all of the changes are consistent with what will come in when we get the Tasmanian planning scheme. They've just brought this forward. The 6 elements of the scheme that have changed, it includes the definitions and some of the exemptions. It's probably not worth going through them in detail. There's still more definitions that could be used in there, which would be good. And some of the exemptions that have been brought in, the state government has allowed us to keep other exemptions that we already had in our scheme in there. So that'll need to be sorted out when we get to the Tasmanian planning scheme. Relevant, probably, or most interest to the public, are the changes to the general residential and the inner residential change. Zones, and that includes setbacks of building envelopes have increased. Their protrusion was only 0.6 of a metre. You could go outside that building envelope with certain protrusions, such as eaves and so forth, to 0.9 metres, so you can go closer to the boundary with that. There's no longer a requirement for a rear setback in either of those zones, so currently it's 4 metres for a general residential and 3 metres for a inner residential property. Now you can go up to the rear boundary, so you can go up at 3 and slope back in at 45 degrees, so it's the same treatment as the side setbacks. They've introduced now that when you consider the impact on the neighbours, you've got to consider their solar panels, which is a positive. For the site coverage clause, you don't need to consider permeability anymore. That's no longer a requirement to say what your permeability is, and there's no maximum permeability. For the private open space, it no longer is required to be accessible from a living area, and it doesn't have to be north-facing or have northern aspect either. The single dwellings, multiple dwellings no longer need to have north-facing windows for living areas. For the overlooking clauses, you no longer need to consider the neighbouring site is vacant. That's just when you consider the performance criteria. So those changes are consistent for both of those zones. In addition, the inner residential zone, the maximum density... doesn't have a maximum anymore, which was 400 metres squared, and now it just only has a minimum. There are other smaller details in that residential site coverage and inner residential has increased from 50% to 65%. For multiple dwellings, the requirement for private open space is reduced from 50 metres squared to 40 metres squared. The minimum horizontal dimension of an open space at the backyard is increased from 3 metres to 4 metres. And the same requirements about no north-facing open space or north-facing windows. And they're the main changes that are in there.
Thank you so much. And, Mayor, one of the reasons why I mentioned infrastructure at the beginning of my contribution was because staring at us at 2.3 on page 83 is Huntingfield State Government Residential Development and the roundabout application. There's information there and also information about the subdivision application, and there's been an enormous community interest, of course, around Huntingfield. This subdivision proposal includes 53 lots with the inner residential zone, 165 lots in the general residential zone, and one lot in the local business zone. The proposal also includes reliance on the proposed roundabout on Channel Highway for access, plus connections to existing roads, construction of internal roads, stormwater infrastructure including bioretention swales and retarding basins, construction of the sewage pump station, vegetation removal, and the inclusion of shared paths and pocket parks. Is there anything... I have a question through you, Mayor, for Ms. Tollemore, about is there anything that... is worth highlighting about the Huntingfield application process of community interest you would like to point out to the council?
I suspect that if Ms. Tyler Moore had anything of interest she wanted pointed out in relation to Huntingfield, she'd have put it in the report that you just read from.
Some of the people watching this on the Facebook live stream and participating won't have read that report, so that's why. But
yeah,
I understand.
Not a time for... I don't think it's really necessary, Councillor Cordova.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. Finally, the building and plumbing permits have seen a significant increase this year, and part of the reason for that, of course, is that when you get lots of development applications, afterwards you get lots of building permits and plumbing permits. That's all. Thanks, Mayor.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you. I had some questions around the Huntingfield subdivision application. So the subdivision proposal, as Councillor Cordova mentioned, includes also the inclusion of shared paths and pocket parks. Are those consistent with the master plan that was presented to the community?
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor, they are generally consistent with the master plan, but it should be noted that the master plan has not been submitted or approved by council, but it is a supporting document.
And so as a supporting document, the state government is following that as every time they submit a DA for each of the stages. Is that correct?
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor, something that is worth noting about the application is that whilst they refer to the state government, or the applicant rather, refers to it as stage one of the development, the application is just submitted as itself. So this particular application talks about subdividing a portion of the site, and that's the portion we look at. So we don't have the ability to look at the rest of the site. It's not how it works. They could have applied for an application which was staged so that you look at it in entirety, and that's where you would look at something like a master plan. In that sort of way that you say these different stages. So we can't make comment about whether the other parts are consistent or not. So the larger area that the councillors are familiar with that was going to have the recreation area, that doesn't form part of this planning permit. We would have to form a later stage if they're going to put it forward.
Thank you. Do we know how many stages are proposed?
Ms. Tollamore.
Through you, Mayor. Off the top of my head, and I apologise, I don't have the exact figure, but it's either 4 or 5.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Oh, thank you, Mayor. First question is, how are we communicating these planning changes, quite significant planning changes, to the public?
So when they came through, as you're aware, they weren't communicated particularly well to Ms. Tyler Moore and the team and to the sector more broadly. And because of that, there was a discussion between Ms. Stevenson and myself, and Ms. Tyler Moore provided some advice about a media release that we could issue. We put one out to the Kimber Chronicle in particular so we could communicate with people what the changes are. PMAT also provided some commentary, I think. I'm not sure if it was in last week's, whether they were separate or the same article, but we essentially took upon ourselves to communicate what was a change directed by the state government and impacts all councils, and I suspect that other councils across Tassie would have done similar in terms of communicating the changes to their local areas.
Great, thank you. Sorry, I missed that in the Chronicle. And thanks for staff for putting this report together too. It's really fantastic to see the work and the amazing workload that you do have in this area. A couple of questions just to in regards to changes to Clause 5.0. The markets on public land are now exempt. What does that mean?
Ms. Tollamore.
Page 81.
Through you, Mayor. Sorry, can the question be repeated? I just missed the key word. Was it
market? So markets on public land are now exempt. What does that mean?
Through you, Mayor, the markets in the scheme we had before this came in required a planning application. We would consider things such as parking associated with those markets and access the building and so forth, but they're now exempt. But just making the point that it doesn't exempt it from other requirements. So there may be leases you need through council or a permit to use the hall. You can't just turn up to any council land and have a market. So you still need to have those approvals. Or there may be particular leases with council or with the Crown. Some of our town halls that we deal with are on the Crown land. So it's exempt from planning, but not necessarily exempt from everything. So anyone who wishes to run a market should contact council for those details.
Thank you. And the point electric cars are exempt? Just what does that mean?
I think it means electric cars are exempt.
Okay.
In the scheme.
Just the chargers that are now exempt to install them. Previously you must have needed a permit.
So yeah, that's what I was wondering. So you needed a permit for chargers, but now you don't need one.
The scheme was silent on it before, so I suspect they hadn't thought of it back when they wrote the scheme, but it's now specified as exempt.
Okay, thank you. And I just had a point in regards to the sentence for the subdivision, but it might have been clarified with what Councillor Westwood said. Page 83, however, it says, however, as there is no master plan or earlier permit, the application is assessed as a complete application for the site, despite the intention to lodge later further subdivision. If you can just clarify that a little bit further, please.
Mr. Hollamore.
Through you, Mayor, that is just what I was referring to, that they've only applied for this section. The property is this big. There will be other sections. So while they refer to it as stage one themselves, it's not stage one. We are just looking at it as an application on its own.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Now the lights are on. Councillor Cordova, would you like to sum up? The motion moved by Councillor Cordova and seconded by Councillor Mitchell is that the Development Services quarterly report be noted. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion carried unanimously. Financial report is the next item. There's a recommended motion on page 90. Councillor Westwood will move and Councillor Mitchell will second. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. This is to consider our financial report as at February 2021. We are in a much better position at the moment than we thought we would be, certainly at this time last year. We forecast a budget underlying result of $2.43 million. We are currently on track for a forecast underlying deficit of $931,000, which is predominantly a reflection of an improvement in revenue being over budget and some expenditure being under budget. It's probably important to note that we did make an allowance for a potential loss of rates revenue under our hardship policy, which hasn't been taken up in its entirety. So an estimated $400,000 is forecast to be moved to rate revenue before the year end. And I guess also it is worth mentioning that there is a risk still that we will continue to have underlying deficits going forwards. We don't have a crystal ball. We've certainly, I think, managed our budget very responsibly and very carefully over the last 12 months. And let's hope that our position continues to improve. So thank you to staff for making very responsible recommendations to council in relation to our financial situation. I do have a couple of questions. It notes on page 90 that the report that employee costs are under budget primarily due to workers' compensation insurance, a refund, and also staff taking substantial annual leave during Christmas and January. So does that mean then that our leave liability has been reduced?
Mr. Breen.
Yes, through you, Mayor. Yes, essentially over the December-January period, the leave provision did reduce substantially. For February, we pretty well came in on budget, so it showed that it was just essentially a trend for those 2 months. My expectation is that March will be pretty close to on budget, and there seems to be a number of staff looking for leave around the holiday period. So obviously April, we hopefully may see a bit of a reduction as well in the provisions.
Great, thank you. The only other comment I have, when we list reserves on page 95, we have had a lot of discussion lately about the public open space reserve, and I note that's currently listed as a balance $927,666. I'm just wondering whether we might be better off to provide more information about that in terms of commitments against that reserve, because I understand we are starting to make, and I fully support it, I don't see the point in having almost $1 million sitting in a reserve and not being spent. I'm just wondering whether potentially saying we've got that amount of cash sitting there is misleading when we are making commitments against it, or whether it is a true reflection of how much we have available to spend.
Mr. Brain.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, essentially we've had some discussions recently about those commitments and the fact that this money is not all available to spend. So we will, as soon as there's been any decisions made in regards to any expenditure, we'll take those funds out of the reserve, or certainly note that they're committed.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
No, the lights are on. Councillor Westwood is the only speaker, so I won't ask her to sum up. The motion is that Council endorses the attached financial report at 28 February 21. Moved by Councillor Westwood, second by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? Motion's carried unanimously. That ends our Council meeting for those watching at home on Facebook. We appreciate you joining us this evening. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time for our next meeting. Thanks a lot.